This is a Shift Podcast Network production.
Yes, 99 Luftballons. Oh, yeah, we have hit 99. I am David O'Callaghan. This is a podcast still going 99 episodes later, looking at all things releasing weekly on streaming and the cinemas, with a bit of pop culture gossip thrown in. And okay, yes, after a few weeks of top-notch entertainment dropping and releasing, how better to release this epic episode down with a development which is basically moving from a feast to a famine. We all knew it was coming at some point, and that maybe this could be the week. It's all a bit tumbleweed and meh. It's a bit meh. However, fear not, because amongst this somewhat mediocre landscape, there are still probably two or three gems that save it from being a total non-event of a week. And yes, there's only one place to start this week. The most non-event of the week. So, shall we begin? Such a big thing that I'm not even going to do a trailer. Because there is no trailer. There's no music even released. Because we're moving music to the top of the board for 1 week only. As the tortured poets department from Taylor Swift finally lands. The new album, yes, Let the Madness Begin. This is the 11th studio album from Taylor Swift. And now has dropped in all its glory on this very, very day. There seems to be four different variants of the physical album out there with numerous bonus tracks attached to each. And yes, the good news is that Aaron Dessner from The National is again producing after Folklore and Evermore, which kind of possibly gives us an indication of the vibe on this one. And the rumour is it seems to be based around the concept of the five stages of grief or heartache. Oh, here we go. My mood is already dropping, but in a good way. Moody Bastards, ahoy. There are 16 songs, not including these bonus tracks, and feature guest stars like Post Malone and Florence and the Machine. So is poor old Joe Alwyn going to get an absolute kicking? Who knows, but we're about to find out. And as regards whether this era gets added to the European live shows, well, that will be answered on May 9th. When Tay-Tay kicks it all off in Paris. Whoop, whoop. So that's the Tortured Poets Department from Taylor Swift. Yes, which is now streaming wherever the hell you stream your music. Moving on to streaming itself. Oh boy, let's start off with this little doozy.
The Jinx is a six-part HBO documentary series. It details a case of real estate heir Robert Durst.
The director promises tonight's final installment will answer questions people have been asking for decades.
As The Jinx aired, Bob and I spoke after every episode. He was very nervous. And I thought to myself, he's gonna run.
My captain told me, whatever you do, don't let Robert Durst get away.
The Jinx Part 2, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst, will be on Sky Documentaries and Now TV from Monday the 22nd. And, oh, where do you even begin with this madness? The story of Robert Durst, the New York real estate heir who had it all and then somehow got caught up in a wave of weird occurrences as his wife disappeared in 1982, then the execution-style killing of his friend and writer Susan Berman in 2000, and then the dismemberment in 2001 of his neighbour, Morris Black. What the feck is going on? What's even more bizarre is that a director of a low-key fictional indie movie from 2010, which was inspired by these strange goings-on, was then contacted by Durst himself and asked him if he wanted to make The Jinx Doc, which most people know aired on HBO in 2015 and was one of the most successful true crime docuseries of its time and spawned what can only be called an industry which now churns out content on a weekly basis. And even though there's a bajillion true crime documentaries these days, this is still regarded as one of the best and most riveting of its time. It was released weekly. Its central figure, whom they interviewed, he was a free man at the time, and bizarrely watching it each week as it aired. And then that final episode bombshell happened. Like, I mean, people lost their mind. Absolutely shocking, unbelievable, gripping. And weirdly, by reviewing this part two, I'm not going to reveal that bombshell, because maybe this second part is going to actually get people bailing back into it who haven't seen it. And do you know what? It's worth catching. It's worth watching if you haven't seen it. I implore you to find it. And if you do know what it's about, sure, you know what the shock is. Anyway, but I just don't want to go there. So catch season one. It's obviously on Sky and Now TV or HBO, wherever you are. And here we go. This series literally takes place hours after the finale aired back in the day and continues the story, follows the repercussions of the show and the chaos and carnage that ensued over the many years that followed. And I cannot lie, I am absolutely obsessed. Cannot wait. Jumping down the rabbit hole, here we go again. That is The Jinx Part 2, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst, which will be on Sky Documentaries and Now TV from Monday the 22nd. Oh, and to any of our American listeners or Canadians, HBO from the Sunday the 21st.
You're all here because there is nothing to return to. Dark days lie ahead of us all. We will teach you how to fight. That's impressive. The Scargivers among them. Those this village holds most dear. I shall destroy them.
Yes, it's Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, which is on Netflix. I'm sure at the time it seemed like a very good idea, like a great idea. Off the back of his very successful Justice League, Director's Cut, Snyder Cut, and his very enjoyable zombie Vegas flick, Army of the Dead, give him all the money he needs to make a two-part, R-rated Star Wars-esque adventure that he always wanted to do. What can go wrong? Well, how about the fact that Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire, aired in 2023 and got absolutely pummeled by both critics and fans. It had cheap and shoddy CGI. The acting was, not the best. And while we do love a slow-mo montage, by God, there was a lot of them. And it wasn't even an R-rated flick. It kept, turned away from the blood and what we wanted. Heads getting chopped off. Very disappointed. Well, as I said, when you greenlight something this big, all you can do is attempt to board the hype train, release Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, and hope that when a tree falls in the woods, that somebody is watching it. Sophia Boutella, Charlie Hunnam, and Demon Hunsu star in this movie yet again, and I'm not even going to bother with any plot lines or descriptions, because barely any of you watched the last one, and very few will probably dive into this. I'm sure you won't be missing anything, but in the name of justice and here I'm back again, always doing the work in the room, I'm clearing my diary for Saturday night with all the vino, maybe two bottles. I might need two bottles to get through this one. That's Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, which is now on Netflix. And yes, you know it, just in case you're asking, Zack Snyder has promised to release two director's cuts fairly soon after. Oh, sweet Jesus.
We made New York the capital of the world. The center of everything.
Sex, money, and an endless adventure.
We see the importance of presentation. It's how we defend ourselves. Underneath, though, it's an act.
Mind if I sit down?
Oh, I wish you could, but we're being joined in just a second.
Ryan Murphy's feud returns for his second season, this time with Capote vs. the Swans, which is now on Disney+. Tom Hollander plays Truman Capote as he ruins his friendships with an elite group of women known as the Swans after he writes a fictionalized account about their hedonistic lifestyle. We're talking the real wives of 1960s New York high society, and with a cast that includes Naomi Watts, Diane Lane, Chloe Sevigny, Calista Flockhart, Demi Moore and Molly Ringwald as the Swans in question. Holy crap, that is some lineup. They obviously decide to ruin Capote's life in turn for this betrayal. Oh yeah. This one looks like a whole lot of stylized and entertaining fun. That's Feud, Capote versus the Swans, which is now on Disney+. In Jimmy Carr, Natural Born Killer on Netflix, the comic refutes the idea that one can't joke about anything these days with his edgy takes on gun control, religion, cancel culture and consent. 60 minutes of absolute, oh my lord, tell me he didn't just say that. Dark comedy at its peak. Listen, you're either on the car train or you're already upset that this is a new special. But either way, the decision is yours. Because Jimmy Carr, Natural Born Killer, is now on Netflix. Reality competition The Circle returns for a sixth season on Netflix. In this one, the players basically live in separate flats in an apartment block and communicate with each other through a voice-activated social media platform called The Circle. Status and strategy collide when online players flirt, befriend, and catfish their way towards $100,000. And for this season, for the first time ever, an AI bot is entering the game as the ultimate catfish. Like Jimmy Carr, you're either in or out on this one. I've no idea what's going on here, and I don't fancy knowing. So that is The Circle, Season 6, which is now on Netflix. And speaking of reality competitions, coming from France, we have Don't Hate the Player, which is also on Netflix, in which participants have no idea of the rules in advance, but do know that they are in a chance of claiming the €150,000 prize. Starting from nothing and sleeping in a makeshift camp, 13 players compete for a spot in a luxury villa and a shot at the big prize in this quite unpredictable game of strategy, betrayal and survival. Should it be a hit, and I'm fairly certain it will, we'll be getting US and UK versions pretty soon afterwards, if they're not already in the works. So that's Don't Hate the Player, which is now on Netflix. More reality-esque madness comes in the form of Going Home with Tyler Cameron on Prime Video. In this one, the giant himbo and star of The Bachelor decides to ship off back home and start a new property show as he develops and wreaks havoc on properties all over Florida. The weather is hot, balmy and sweaty in Florida, so of course he may have to take off his top on numerous occasions while knocking down those various walls. A clear sign of our times. Again, I'll leave it up to you if you're going to watch this one. Going Home with Tyler Cameron is now on Prime Video, and best of luck with that.
From the densest forests to the deepest oceans to the hottest deserts, everything is connected through the vast web of life.
Can you see the time?
And now, for the first time, we're going to reveal how.
Moving to something a bit more natural. In our living world on Netflix, Kate Blanchett narrates this shiny new nature doc, which explores and examines the various connections in the natural world. Building on astonishing scientific revelations and featuring stunning footage of the planet's incredible natural networks, Netflix continues to pretend it's as cool and as good as the BBC and David Attenborough. God loves a trier, but if nature docks are your jam, Our Living World is now on Netflix. One for the tweens out there, Jane returns for a second season to Apple TV+. Jane, who is inspired by the mission of Jane Goodall, is a 9-year-old budding environmentalist on a quest to save endangered animals. Using her imagination, Jane takes her best friends David and Greybeard, the chimpanzee, on epic adventures to help protect wild animals all around the world. One for mini Gretas everywhere, that's Jane Season 2, which is now on Apple TV+. Two recent movie releases which are now available to stream for free, and both coming in under the category of must try harder. Argyle on Apple TV+ and Expendables 4 on Prime Video left a lot to be desired. Oh, sweet lord. Expendables 4 was the expected hot mess of aging action heroes we thought it was going to be, and Argyle, well, of the two, that's probably the more disappointing. Matthew Vaughn directing a Turkey, which starred Bryce Dallas Howard and Sam Rockwell, while Dua Lipa and Henry Cavill barely have any screen time, despite their front and centre movie poster presence. A poor man's spy thriller, that's Argyle, which is now on Apple TV+, and an even poorer over-the-hill action parody, that's Expendables 4, which is now on Prime Video. For any Upshaws fans out there, Season 5 returns to Netflix this week. Set in Indiana, a working-class African-American family struggles to make it work and make it right without the blueprints to do it. Starring Wanda Sykes and Mike Epps, a popular hit for Netflix, that's The Upshaws Season 5, which is now on Netflix. And finally this week we have The Grim Variations, which is a new anime anthology series on Netflix that presents six dark twists on the classic Grimm stories, which delve into the shadowy depths of human desire. Oh, butter. The stories come about after the Grimm brothers' sister, Charlotte, questions whether or not the characters in the stories they tell her really lived happily ever after. Guaranteed to be absolutely batshit, this six-episode series is a must-watch for fans of anime and, yes, dark, disturbing fairy tales. I'm in, give it to me. That is The Grimm Variations, which is now streaming on Netflix. Oh, I told you it was a bit of a sketchy week, but what can I say? My heart just wasn't in that. It's just left me. My heart has left my body and my soul is left as well, because that is a pretty average lineup. Well, except for the Jinx. Don't get, you know, focus on the Jinx and let the others pass you by. Or maybe you're excited for something. Who am I to judge? But if you do want to run out of the house, run out as quick as you can. Please God, there's something at the cinema this week for you to go see.
You all came highly recommended. You know the rules. No real names, no backstories. No cell phones.
So whose kid is she?
A very wealthy man who's about to be $50 million poorer.
I'm here to make sure you're safe.
What's your name? Mine's Abigail.
You can call me Joey.
Do you have any kids?
I have a little boy.
See you in 24 hours.
Abigail is the new horror flick from the directing pair known as Radio Silence, who already gave us Scream 5 and 6, as well as Ready or Not. After a group of would-be criminals kidnap the 12-year-old ballerina daughter of a powerful underworld figure, all they have to do to collect a 50 million ransom is watch the girl overnight in an isolated mansion. Ah, sure, no problem at all. What can go wrong? Try everything. Holy crap. 2024 has been a bit of a rocky start for horror movies. Normally an easy win for studios and audiences, the releases so far have been either pretty crap, or in some cases pretty good, like Immaculate and Late Night with the Devil, but these were much more indie, highbrow and not big at the box office. Well, clear the decks and rejoice, because Abigail has landed and holy moly, it's time to get crazy. Filmed in Ireland and starring our very own Alicia Weir, who recently played Matilda, in what is an absolute star turnout. This was filmed in pre-COVID times. I believe she was only 12 or 13 when she made this. And wow. With a fantastic cast that includes Melissa Barrera, Dan Stevens, Catherine Newton, the late Angus Cloud and Kevin Durand. This one has plenty of jumps, masses of gore, and is extremely funny, which always kind of helps with a horror movie. Here's my one thing. If you have not seen the trailer and do not really know what's going to happen or what this movie is about, keep it like that. Don't stop. Step away. Go in blind. I guarantee you, you will have a much better time. You'll lose your mind even more. That's why I'm not kind of entering into a spoiler zone today, despite the trailer completely giving away the whole storyline. A movie I personally think is much better than Megan, but aimed squarely at the same audience. I cannot recommend this enjoyable schlock enough. Oh my god. If you like horror movies filled with monsters, jokes, dwindling lead characters, then this is perfect for you. Yes, Abigail is the first truly insane, batshit, gory and mass appealing horror of the year, with, as I said, some hilarious moments scattered throughout, giving some much needed relief before, yes, the carnage returns. Oh boy, oh boy. Again, Alicia Weir gives an exceptional star turn as the somewhat troublesome abductee. I implore you, biggest tub of popcorn, biggest drink you can find, maybe a glass of wine, and have a fun night out. Love it, love it. So that is Abigail, which is now in cinemas. Jean du Barry is a French period drama that follows Jean Vaubernier, played here by Mai Nguyen, as a woman born into poverty who uses her intellect and charms to climb the social ladder, rising to the opulent court of King Louis XV of France, played by Johnny Depp. The two fall madly in love, and against all convention, Jean moves into the Palace of Versailles as scandal and revolution ensue. Mai Nguyen, who plays the lead, is also the director and co-writes. Mai Nguyen herself is absolutely sensational in this role. I was gripped and couldn't take my eyes off her. I wasn't fully aware of her as an actress or as a director, shame on me, until a quick Google blew my absolute mind when I discovered she played the opera-singing space alien Diva Plava Laguna in The Fifth Element. What? Now, I'm not one to goss, but I feel, based on the chatter in those French courts and palaces I was enjoying, it feels kind of actually appropriate. She was married to Luc Besson at a very, very young age, shall we say, and has spoken in interviews about how her relationship with Besson at the time is what inspired the movie Leon. Oh, sketch. He also left her after the movie The Fifth Element to hook up with its main star, Mia Jovovich. Holy crap. This lady has lived a life. Anyways, I'll climb back out of that rabbit hole and just say, if you enjoy big, glamorous French period dramas where all the pomp and money is up there on screen for all to see, then this one is defo for you. Johnny Depp is extremely well cast as King Louis, but this is the Mai Nguyen Madame du Barry show as she brings us into this world of extravagance and attempts to navigate its extremely complicated and tricksy rules. Loved it. Completely out of nowhere. Surprised me. Beautiful. Old school French cinema. That's Jean du Barry, which is now in cinemas. And finally in cinemas this week, we have The Book of Clarence, which is a new take on the Hollywood era biblical epic, but with Monty Python-esque vibes lurking throughout. Streetwise but struggling Clarence, played here by Lakeith Stanfield, is trying to find a better life for himself and his family. Captivated by the power and glory of the rising Messiah and his apostles, he risks everything to carve out his own path to a divine life, ultimately discovering that the redemptive power of belief may be his only way out. Arriving after multiple delays and a pretty poor showing at the US box office, reviews have been middling and, fine. But if it is some divine yet slightly edgy inspiration that you were looking for this weekend, that's The Book of Clarence, which is now in cinemas. And there you go. There you go. That is your cinema for the week. Yeah, that's, pretty good. Won't complain about that at all. Quick look at three things before we head off into the sunset. Three things we noticed in pop culture this week. First up, it was confirmed that Tom Hiddleston will return as Jonathan Pine for two more seasons of, The Night Manager. The Night Manager is back! The second season will be set 8 years after the last series, which was in fact 7 years ago, and will start shooting this year. There is no word who else will return, but we assume Olivia Colman and Elizabeth Debicki should pop up, at least in a few episodes. While Le Carre didn't in fact write a sequel to The Night Manager, his family and estate are keeping a close eye on this one. And the good news is that David Farr, who wrote the original series, is back to write this one. Next up, a Chris Farley biopic is seemingly in the works with Paul Walter Hauser, set to play the legendary comedian, and Josh Gad directing. The script is supposedly based on the New York Times best-selling biography, The Chris Farley Show, a biography in three acts. He was a huge Saturday Night Live sensation who went on to work in movies like Black Sheep, Tommy Boy and Beverly Hills Ninja. Farley sadly passed away in 1997, aged 33, from an overdose of cocaine and morphine. Hauser couldn't be a more perfect choice, and Kelsey Preece, I'm pretty excited for this one. And finally, we have Stephen King's, or technically Richard Bachman's, The Running Man. It's getting a remake, people, and Edgar Wright is set to direct. And, wait for it, man of the moment, Glenn Powell, will be leading the cast as Ben Richards. The novel The Running Man, unlike the 1987 Arnie Schwarzenegger movie is set in the dystopian United States in 2025, where the country's economy is in ruins and violence has risen all over the world. It sounds a bit too real, actually. 2025, you say? Ben Richards, who is impoverished and has an ill daughter, turns to the games network as he's desperate for money. It's all set around a reality show called The Running Man, where contestants can go anywhere in the world but are being chased by a team of hitmen as contestants are declared an enemy of the state. Contestants earn $100 per hour if they stay alive and avoid capture, get $100 extra for each law enforcement officer or hunter they kill, and $1 billion if they survive for 30 days. Hopefully Wright will stick to the book's original story and not the movie's criminals on their own premise. And while we're talking the Batman books, hello, The Long Walk. Yes, I'll say it again. The Long Walk, people. Seriously, what's going on? Somebody please make it. I'll move on. Since it's a short week, let's have another few bits of goss for you to devour. We've talked a lot about Liam Neeson and the Naked Gun reboot here. Well, this week, Pamela Anderson has joined the upcoming movie as the love interest initially made famous by Priscilla Presley. So that's the Naked Gun reboot. Now You See Me 3 has now been confirmed and is ready to start filming as the thieving illusionists, known as the Four Horsemen, return with the elaborate heists, set pieces and schemes. Also joining the cast, we have Ariana Greenblatt, Justice Smith and Dominic Sessa. Possibly as a younger rival magician gang? Who knows? Anyway, might be time for a rewatch, folks. I know the first one is defo on Netflix, so that's Now You See Me 3. And finally, Steve Buscemi has joined the cast of Wednesday Season 2 on Netflix. Not 100% sure as who, but possibly the new headmaster of Nevermore Academy. I assume that means he'll be hanging out with Jenna in Grano and Mullies while they're shooting here in Ireland. So we'll see. Keep your eye out. They could be wandering the streets of the batter. And there you go. An extra Brucey bonus. Three more things happening in pop culture. And that is your week. Yeah. As I said, some highs, many lows. But fear not, because next week, folks, next week, it's episode 100. Oh my god. Episode 100 of Here and Back Again! It's also birthday weekend. What is happening? And I'm pretty sure there's going to be a lot more releases worthy of our time and eyeballs. So maybe go for a long walk. See, there's the long walk again. Listen to Tay Tay. Watch The Jinx Part 2. And lose your mind over Abigail. And the carnage which follows her wherever she goes. This is David O'Callaghan for the Here and Back Again podcast, wishing you all the best, and until next week, stay safe and binge happy. Well, hello there, post-credits traveler. Welcome yet again. Da-da-da-da-da. Ah, yes, here we are. As you know, a place where anything goes. Truths will be told and meandering, rambling tales are given. But this week, it is also a place where dreams and wishes come true. Folks, have I a story to tell you. An epic 40-year tale that finally came to a sensational conclusion this week. A story of multiple worlds, magical creatures, different coloured fonts, and a wise, semi-old man who now feels like a young kid all over again. Rumours are out there that the post-credit Travellers crew are a special, wonderful, gifted bunch who adhere to the law that not all superheroes wear capes. Well, I'm here to tell you those are not rumours, but are indeed fact. Where do I begin? Well, how about... how about we read you a... just a little snippet. We read you a little story first.
Oh, I'm welling up here.
Bastian looked at the book. I wonder, he said to himself, what's in a book while it's closed? Oh, I know. It's full of letters printed on paper. But all the same, something must be happening, because as soon as they open it, there's a whole story with people I don't know yet, and all kinds of adventures, and deeds and battles. And sometimes there are storms at sea, or it takes you to strange cities and countries. All those things are somehow shut up in a book. Of course you have to read it to find out, but it's already there. That's the funny thing. I just wish I knew how it could be. Suddenly, an almost festive mood came over him. He settled himself, picked up the book, opened it to the first page, and began to read. The never-ending story. Chapter 1, Fantastica in Danger. All the beasts in Howling Forest were safe in their caves, nests and burrows. It was midnight. The storm wind was whistling through the tops of the great ancient trees. The towering trunks creaked and groaned. Suddenly a faint light came zigzagging through the woods, stopped here and there, trembling fitfully, flew up into the air, rested on a branch, and a moment later hurried on. It was a glittering sphere about the size of a child's ball. It moved in long leaps, touched the ground now and then bounded up again. But it wasn't a ball. It was a will-o'-the-wisp. It had lost its way. And that's something quite unusual, even in Fantastica, because ordinarily, will-o'-the-wisps make others lose their way. Yes, my post-credit comrades, you may remember me telling you my truth a few weeks back about my rare copy of The Neverending Story, unfortunately going AWOL about 40 years ago and never being tracked. Poor old Paddy Crofton. Little did he know how upset I'd be. Well, stop those lights. You hear that sound? That beautiful... Oh, I can smell... I love the smell of napalm and books in the morning. Because what you hear there, that is what the brave, the wise and the knows where to search Brian Crowley found. Using all his guile and his underground network of museum contacts, yes, he has indeed obtained the multicoloured, multi-layered version of Michael Ende's classic. I'm not going to lie, after initially being shook, having been handed it after a Dagny concert last week, my emotions then led me to being slightly overwhelmed and deeply harking back to a different, more innocent time. 1984. Oh, George Orr, he may have seen it a different way, but for me, it was a beautiful time. So thank you, Master Crowley. And all whilst the birthday week approaches, it's beautiful. I send you much love and hugs. And while we're at it, to the rest of you post-credit travellers, after 99 episodes, I want to thank you for being crazy enough to be still here, still listening to this guff. And I want to send some love and hugs your way too. Everybody needs some love and hugs, and God damn it, I'll do it in the form of one of my favourite 12-inch singles I ever bought. I got it in the 80s, and yes, it's still sitting here, sitting pretty in the sitting room. It may sound like a sad song. It's not. It's quite emo and beautiful and moody. It's a moody bastard song, some would say, and kind of weirdly perks me up. So, with that, Debbie Gibson, let's do it. Take us away.